Chapter 7. Building Dreams. Remember your dreams and fight for them. You must know what you want from life. There is just one thing that makes your dreams impossible. Your fear. Paulo Coelho. Rock Anderson had no fear, as he continued in life after a harrowing divorce, digging deeper into his work, accomplishing bigger things, clinching new accounts, and loving it. Few things bothered him. He took the good with the bad, remembering his dear father, who always made him laugh. A man who did right, along with Mom, in raising him, his adored boy Rock, because Dad didn't have it as good as a youngster. And by God, he would do all he could to make sure his son had everything he wanted and achieved all his dreams in life. Dad was content to know the yellow brick road belonged to Rock, and that was enough for him. Now the son was looking to expand his knowledge and business, for he was a man who desired to be well-rounded, a go-getter, a man of means, but also a man of knowledge. His present company was being audited by a conglomerate wanting to buy it, for they saw a big future in Rock's setup. They would take it where they wanted, and that was fine with Rock Anderson, so long as they paid the hefty asking sum that both parties agreed was reasonable. With the balloon profit, Rock would start yet another company, one that was still undefined yet stuck in the back of his mind, an undertaking that was enough of a challenge to keep him busy for the next few years. One night at dinner, while sitting alone with his crisp new tie and $1,000 suit, a man at the next table with a Texas accent was speaking out loud, boisterous as Texans are known to be, hat by his side.
"This business is getting so big, I have my hands full. I just wish I had Junior interested in taking over. It's killing me."
He talked a mile a minute without taking a breath in between words, the type of cowboy so full of it that his eyes are brown, as they say in Texas. This is the same as saying he was full of hot air. The person sitting with him just listened attentively. "There's really nothing to say to something like that," the Texan continued.
"All he's got to do is put the dang item in a box and ship it. It's that easy. But no, Junior wants to continue running around with those tarts he has for girlfriends and finish college. Been there 5 years now."
He laughed heartily like it was the best joke in America. Still, the man sitting across from him said nothing. Maybe he was tired of putting up with the Texan. Maybe his mission in life called for just this. Rock overheard the conversation and wondered about Junior. Why he wouldn't take his dad's offer and make a ton. He was in college, liked girls. He was probably immature. Or maybe he didn't want to be around the old man. Who knows? Who cares? Rock continued eating his delicious steak aux trois poivres, a house specialty served with creamy garlic mashed potatoes and thin French string beans finished with salted butter. Suddenly, a thought came to mind. Rock would ask the man what he needed to grow his Texas company, and Rock would provide it. But then he decided that, no, it would be presumptuous of me to say anything, not to say be rude. "Excuse me, Mr. Texan, I just heard you." Instead, Rock enjoyed the meal, put the thought away, and headed home after dessert. The following day, the idea for a new company came together. He would start from the ground up. Thinking of the Texan's needs, Rock figured he would begin a subcontracting firm. In every field he was familiar with, human resources, billing and payment, all in all, he would provide these services to take some weight and time off of company's shoulders. After all, other businessmen subcontracted work with great success, and they had been doing it for years, so why not me? This was the start of Rock Anderson's new venture, virtually putting it all together through marketing and sheer brains. He would experiment with a few things. He would contract a headhunter to send him referrals, thereby taking a load off their shoulders. The headhunter, in turn, would be paid by the major company and Rock by the headhunter. This was a tactic never seen before, and soon, headhunters across the country called with referrals. Rock's personal assistant called every one of his contacts offering services, and to no one's surprise, 9 out of every 10 companies bought in. The problem was Rock's use of time. But since this was a new venture, it was one that required phone calls back and forth. Rock solved this by hiring assistants to relay messages after compiling a database of over 10,000 names, a list comprising of people he knew personally and all from different industries. Seeing his method worked and that he had only minimal decisions to make, he decided his work was now a virtual reality. Create a business and run it from far away. Why, he could actually work from home. Ash was a new person. While still working in San Diego, he began to work more efficiently in order to have time to dedicate to the next phases of the seminars he was attending, which were the advanced courses, followed by a senior course and yet another, the work cleansing his mind and soul, leading him to his destiny as he grew spiritually day by day. Things began to make sense to him. He understood there was still an emptiness inside that he could not identify, a distinction he would unmask in given time. The old feeling in the pit of his stomach was now like a glowing light, a reminder of what ate at him in the past. It was his father, it had always been his father who pushed him, cajoled him, at times mistreating him in front of others, even ridiculing him in public, for all to see. This treatment affected his self-esteem. He now knew, and soon the desire to vomit disappeared. Indira attended several of the seminars accompanied by the girls. After seeing the effect of this transformational work on Ash, she prayed this was the destiny he was looking for. Indira saw him take leaps and bounds in his personal life, opening up his heart, expressing his profound love for her, teasing her about past arguments that now seemed ridiculous, engaging her in his every interest as if they'd just met last week. The girls giggled all day long at the thought Daddy would do anything to please them. "Soon I will move on from where I am standing to a more favored spot," he confessed in front of 200 seminar participants. His words were simple enough but general, not to be interpreted as something else, nor to be taken lightly. Ash knew what he was saying. The seminar leader, a self-assured man who dressed impeccably and spoke with authority, asked him to clarify. "The time has come for me to choose a different path in life, the one that awaits me," he said, still giving no real details. And people want to hear details of your dreams because this is a way to justify your own dreams. And hearing of others' dreams inspires you to follow your own. The seminar leader turned to the audience for effect. "Please continue, Ash." "Since I was a child, I saw my future as in the realm of the spiritual world. This seminar has guided me in that direction, though I'm still defining what that is. Soon enough, it will come to me." The participants applauded gently as the next person was called to share in front of everyone. Ash heard nothing the rest of that night except the voice of the holy man back in London. "Look at the question, and the answer will lead you to your destiny." The question was, why do things work out at the last minute? This question was from his days back in London when Indira fell sick. The question was directly related to the phone call from IBM, to Indira getting well, to the elder Jeffrey straightening out his son, to his father calling him home after the Chicago disaster. This was back then, so his personal question was now his new quest, now in front of him, and interestingly enough, the answer to his destiny as well. Ash knew that if he answered that question, he would find his destiny and explode upwards from there. He was still motivated, and he wanted to reach that moment of understanding more than anything in life. Rock transitioned easily from selling his old company to starting the new one, primarily because he was some sort of genius when it came to decisions, and also because he figured he had 35 employees who loved him, and he did not want to see them out on the street when the conglomerate took over and fired them all in favor of the new urban yuppie types who were making a splash in America's workforce. They were an army, these guys, with degrees and experience to the teeth. After spending summers in apprenticeships with big-name companies, their work essentially slaving it with a lousy allowance. But hey, nobody forced them to work for nothing. They knew what they were getting into, and if it served them well in the future, so be it. And the truth was, these kids' plans and apprenticeships worked. After graduating from college, they were hired for important positions, becoming general managers in some cases, and managing editors of newspapers and magazines. Wall Street recruited the best and brightest each spring semester. IBM, FBI, CIA, and others filled openings right on the spot. Rock's Orange County surfer kids would grow with him, help him grow the new company, and there was no stopping them from together reaching the sky because they believed in him, in his mission in life, and in his deep love for humanity. If the presumed buyer, a huge conglomerate, acted as promised by keeping Rock's employees, it would be a miracle. Rock wanted to see his kids continue on a fruitful path to the future. Yet everyone knew how these worldwide companies worked. They made promises they did not keep. His young people partied the day the company sold, and again when the new one started the following Monday after a three-day weekend. Rock had a loyal team behind him, a fresh new idea that was yet to be broadly implemented in the United States, and most of all, he had his freedom again, to do as he wanted and with whom he wanted. Although the other day he met another beautiful woman, but she could wait in line with the rest of them as he was a well-sought-after gentleman. That first year passed quickly. Rock Anderson moved forward with his former loyal employees who, after being fired by the conglomerate, quickly ran back to him. Today, they were shaking the earth with Rock's new idea of subcontracting, particularly in the field of headhunting, as his specialty was in working with highly talented and productive individuals, the hard-to-find types. A bigger building was in store as he needed 50 new hires. So the logical and most important new position was in human resources. The perfect fit for the job was the very first student he hired years ago, a loyal individual who looked up to Rock like a big brother. Rock had that way about him, bringing people in and talking to them, showing and sometimes teaching them little things that would improve their work efficiency, as well as their daily life, such as in personal relationships. "Go see your mother this weekend," he would suggest. "You talk about her all the time. Tell her you love her." These sweet words, and more, were meant to inspire his young people to do as he did, because any time he was near Palm Springs, he would visit his parents. They lived there now due to a generous, gifted house by their only son, who wanted them out of Minnesota winters and into a year-round summer, and to live close by for frequent visits. The kids at work were his new family away from home. Rock could proudly say he never lost touch with or disconnected with mom and dad the way so many do. He wanted the same for others. The itch to be with a woman again in a strong and stable relationship surfaced, but he ignored it. His new family would do until he was ready. One early morning in spring, Rock received a call from a colleague with an invitation to take his place in a seminar in Newport Beach. "It's paid for. I'm just up to my eyeballs in work. Go, have fun, and tell me about it. I heard the guy leading the seminar is amazing." Rock considered. He would spend the weekend listening to a man talking about recreating oneself as a pathway in life. Rock could use something like that, if only to take a little vacation away from the stress of his burgeoning company. He arrived that morning bright and early for the event and took his seat. The MC announced the course leader. He recognized the seminar guy right away. It was Gold, the magician humorist he saw perform in Costa Mesa years ago. Now the young man from those early days used his powers to influence others, inspiring greatness and self-expression as a path to bigger things. His work in Costa Mesa had left Rock feeling Gold had a big future, and now here he was, though a totally different, transformed human being. His suit and tie bespoke of seriousness and business, his short hair obviously a weekly affair, and he no longer wore the idiotic hat of his first gigs as a magician. His magic was now to be experienced over one short 3-day weekend. That is what made him so amazing. Rock took it all in stride, a feeling of jealousy in his blood, seeing the young magician, now a seminar leader, though he did not know why he felt this or where the feeling came from. Rock would listen and pay attention, follow instructions, and report back to his friend on Monday morning with a quick phone call. He briefly experienced the urge to leave the seminar and return to his office, but instead, he focused on Gold, who is now receiving strong applause. "He hasn't done a thing and people applaud," he whispered to the person sitting next to him. "You'll see why." Rock guessed this guy was returning for a second or maybe a third shot of Gold. "Oh well, let's see then." Individuals stood in front of the seminar attendees to explain where they were stuck in life and what they needed to do to get out of that grind, but mostly they spoke publicly to hear answers from the leader on stage as if he was some Latter-day Saint or God come down from the mountains. Gold was strong, self-assured, and powerful. He was revered by many. Rock wasn't sold on him just yet, but he decided to just listen and trust the process, because this guy just may have something to say. People from all walks of life went to see Gold. You saw the disenfranchised, the former hippies, the rich and the middle class, artists and musicians, businessmen and women. At the end of the day's session, Rock approached Gold to remind him they'd met in Costa Mesa years ago. "You fixed my flat tire. What are you doing these days?" the leader wanted to know. "Just more of the same, yet I am aggrandizing employment," Rock replied, meaning that he was connecting people all over the globe with one another, preparing a network of brilliant, reliable, and integrity-loaded individuals to take over the world. "Come back tomorrow. We'll have a blast." Gold now went on to the next person, leaving Rock to think, this man's ego is bigger than his talent. That night, before going to sleep, the phone rang. It was Gold, reaching out to Rock. "Rock Anderson, I didn't take the time to speak to you after the seminar. I apologize. Listen, I want you to sit with me tomorrow and speak to the gang." Gold called his participants the gang. He had to appear cool after all. "How did you get my number? You gave me your card that night we met, remember? I kept it in case I wanted to ring you." "Well, oh, I see. I have no experience in public speaking. I don't know if I'm any good at it." "Don't worry," replied Gold. "I'll coach you along. We'll have a dialogue like Socrates and what's his name?" he laughed. Rock was swayed in his favor. "I want to be straight with you, Rock. I overdid the day today. I think I was too wound up and so gave away too much, and now I have less material for tomorrow. I could sure use your help, as this new business you have going appears to be awesome. I'm certain my clients would love to hear about it." It never occurred to Rock Gold ran out of material, needing a filler the next day. The guy talked so much, and although he was being used by Gold, he didn't know it. A chat on individualizing headhunting would be a novelty, as the concept was still in its initial creative stages, about to explode the market in about a year's time. There was still much to be implemented in that area, and Gold thought that by having Rock share his expertise, he, Gold, would look good. "We can both look good, Rock. Just think about it. Everybody wants to look good." The dialogue between the two on stage the next day went well. And although it was intended to last only 15 minutes, it went on for an hour as the gang asked one question after another. Like out of nowhere, Rock turned on the sleeping charm, Sleeping Within, and excited the gang. Gold smiled, acknowledging Rock for his contribution. Well, when the talk ended, a smallish man with dark skin and penetrating eyes stood up and exclaimed, "I can help your company grow." It was a bold statement, but not a surprising one because seminars worked as a source of networking oneself into greatness. Rock froze. He didn't need help. That was for certain. He already had several companies, selling each for a considerable profit. Why would he need this guy to help him grow the company? Gold settled the issue quickly. You two get together during the break, and now we will continue with... Rock left the stage. Returning to his seat, he was intrigued by the guy with the dark skin, the guy who stated he could help his company grow. Maybe I should listen to what he has to say, he muttered, while warming his butt on the now familiar chair he occupied throughout the weekend. I would be a good consultant for your company, he said to Rock, who looked at him curiously. What's your name?
Ash Jeffrey.
Rock gave him a business card.
Call me, he said, thinking it would be just another phone pitch to deal with, like so many others received that day.
Ash called the next day. Weeks passed as the two began a dialogue, with Ash sharing ideas and Rock taking them in. Soon enough, Rock saw the value of Ash's words, but did not like the concept of growing the company with a consultant. Rock did not need a consultant. He needed more hands. In truth, what Rock needed to grow the company to unexpected heights was another person of his caliber. But that was inconceivable because Rock didn't need help. He always did everything himself. Ash found a way to convince Rock to employ him as he was desperate for work. I will bring in England and other European countries to your company as well as India. Rock considered the mass of the India opportunity at his command. That would double your revenue instantly, Ash concluded. Rock smiled at the thought of going global. Maybe his dream of working from home could become a reality after all. Because prior to meeting Ash Jeffrey, Rock thought the idea was just a dream.